We first became aware of him in May of 2013.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening.
He was working as a contract security guard at a local courthouse, and he made some statements that were inflammatory and contradictory that concerned his coworkers about terrorism.
FBI Director James Comey speaking yesterday about Omar Sadiq Mateen. Was he a terrorist?
First, he claimed family connections to Al-Qaeda. When this was reported to us, the FBI's Miami office opened a preliminary investigation. And over the next 10 months, we attempted to determine whether he was possibly a terrorist.
Omar Sadiq Mateen, 29 years old, American citizen, angry young male, American citizen. Again and again, angry young male. But after questioning him in person twice in 2013 and 2014, the FBI determined that Mateen was no terrorist. Omar Sadiq Mateen was normal then, just an angry young man in a country of angry young men. And then he bought a gun, because in a nation where angry young men are free, there is nothing stopping the angry young men whom the FBI deems as normal from buying a gun. Might anything have raised a red flag or a redder flag to the FBI? Here's James Comey again.
We're also going to look hard at our own work to see whether there is something we should have done differently. So far, the honest answer is, I don't think so. I don't see anything in reviewing our work that our agents should have done differently, but we'll look at it in an open and honest way and be transparent about it.
One of the ironies of this whole investigation is that even if Mateen was determined to be a threat, and if he remained on those terrorist watch lists, he would have been able to go into a gun store and legally purchase the exact same assault rifle and handgun that he used on Sunday. Timothy Edgar reviewed terrorist watch lists under both the Bush and Obama administrations from 2006 to 2009. He's now a visiting fellow at Brown University's Watson Institute.
The terrorist watch list is just the comprehensive consolidated list of everyone the U.S. government suspects of being a terrorist. And the way you get on it is if one of the nominating agencies, that's what they're called, the intelligence community or the FBI, has reasonable suspicion, that's the standard, to put you on this list. And for the FBI, that pretty much equates to being under investigation, which is why Omar Mateen was on that list a couple of times while he was under investigation by the FBI.
To extend the status of being on that list to also being unable to purchase guns, would that be a significant change in the consequences of being on a watch list?
Well, it would be a change. To my mind, it's a fairly obvious thing to do, just because being on the terrorist watch list already results in you having a number of inconveniences and even sort of what would otherwise be violations of your liberty, being given extra scrutiny at the airport or even not being allowed to fly at all, being denied certain kinds of licenses like a hazmat license. So to me, yes, of course, it's a consequence that people wouldn't like.
Does anyone, any court, evaluate the probable cause or the probity of the nomination process?
No, it does not. And the reason for that is this is just a watch list. It doesn't result in your being arrested or there being a search warrant or wiretap order against you. It's basically an information sharing system for the government. So you're just put on that list based on the agency's decision that you meet the criteria. There's an analyst at the FBI who checks that and decides whether or not the information against you is strong enough that it meets the reasonable suspicion test.
So there is virtually no due process in this.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is not anything like the kind of due process that we normally expect in judicial proceedings.
So given that there's no due process and that a judge doesn't evaluate the nominating process, how can you justify taking away any rights from an individual who's on a watch list?
Well, sure. I think after September 11th, we put up with a certain amount of this kind of thing for counterterrorism programs. You know, one of the justices of the Supreme Court has said, you know, the Bill of Rights is not a suicide pact. When you have these kind of compelling interests to prevent terrorism, then you can take some steps that might otherwise normally not be okay. I certainly think that, you know, the courts are going to look at whether the process is fair and there should be improvements made in the watch listing process. I think whether to have a watch list is in itself already in many ways a curtailment of ordinary standards of civil liberty. But the question is, once you've decided to go down that road and have that step, and use it for airport screening or license screening or other kinds of events, what sort of events should happen? And it seems to me that purchasing a gun is a pretty obvious one that you shouldn't be able to do if you're under reasonable suspicion of terrorism.
If you were going to have a watch list, you've already made the decision that you're going to have a watch list, why wouldn't you as well add restrictions that you can't buy a gun, you can't buy explosives, you can't get a hazmat permit, all these sorts of things?
Well, I think that's exactly right. Those are the things that make sense to have triggering the watch list hit. You know, if you have a watch list hit, you don't do that sort of thing.
Well, but why wasn't it done? Why wasn't it done?
Basically, the political power of the NRA and the gun lobby has prevented the government from adopting that sort of common sense step.
Although in terms of the mass shootings that we follow and the ones that we pay no attention to here in the media, it's a tiny, tiny minority of individuals on watch lists who are involved in these shootings. For instance, Adam Lanza in Newtown would not have been caught by a watch list weapons ban. And even if he had been on some sort of mental illness watch list, he could have just grabbed his mom's gun, which is what he did.
Well, certainly none of these counterterrorism measures are foolproof or, you know, necessarily going to stop every attack. For Adam Lanza or other domestic terrorists, there is the possibility of being put on a terrorist watch list, even if you're not connected to an international terrorist group.
Omar Siddiqui Mateen is a domestic terrorist, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Inspired by a foreign group. So these are efforts, you know, basically where the government, the FBI, the local police, other agencies need to improve their intelligence gathering and information sharing. This is just one system that allows you to do it.
Is it conceivable that Omar Siddiqui Mateen was notified that he was on a watch list?
Almost certainly he would have known that, having been questioned by the FBI. I don't know that he was notified specifically that he was on a watch list, but he certainly knew he was under suspicion by the FBI. And if you know anything about the watch list, you know that that's a likely consequence of being under investigation by the FBI for terrorism.
So here's a bit of speculation here, but it is a bit of a dramatic moment in the sequence of events that led to this horrible tragedy. When Omar went into the gun shop and purchased his weapon and waited for the background check to come back, do you think he expected to be allowed to purchase that gun or that he expected to be caught and screened by the FBI?
I don't know how much people understand what that background check is and what's likely to result if you're under suspicion of terrorism. I guess we're having a lot of discussion about it now, so it might become relatively well known that even if you are on a terrorist watch list, you can still go ahead and purchase a gun. Certainly, ISIS has made the availability of guns in the United States kind of part of their recruiting message to would-be jihadists in the U.S. Hey, this is a great country. You can go out and get a gun very, very easily.
Well, at the very least, he probably went, no kidding. Look at that.
Yeah. I mean, this was a man who also was working as a security guard. So that's another question in terms of the watch list. Why wasn't his employer notified? Why wasn't the vetting process for becoming a security professional something that would be impacted by being on the terrorist watch list?
Given some of the details we're learning about Omar Siddiqui Mateen, is it possible that the FBI watch list is too narrow, that it basically says, oh, he said angry things, he talked about ISIS, let's look to see if he's funding or planning something specifically involved with ISIS. And it eliminates all sorts of other personal details in Omar's life that might have bore on the question of stress, anger, likelihood of becoming unstable in some way. In this particular case, his sexuality.
I think part of this is a sophisticated question about countering violent extremism and prevention. And the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security work together to create a program where they try to stop people from becoming radicalized. And that program, I think, has been somewhat successful, but it needs to be beefed up with further, more sophisticated psychology. And perhaps they would have understood that this person was particularly at risk and thought about strategies to prevent and intervene. And that's tricky and difficult to do, obviously, because you're looking at two different approaches. One is to try to develop a criminal case against someone for terrorism, including possibly using a sting operation. And the other is trying to turn him away from a very dark path. And those can be in tension with each other. In this case, perhaps the softer approach would have worked if they had done it in a more sophisticated way. But I think that's going to require a lot of effort to put together a program that would be more effective at countering these kinds of tendencies in young men who may be looking towards going down that kind of path.
Timothy Edgar, Senior Fellow in International and Public Affairs at Brown University's Watson Institute. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.